Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, and I'm phoning it in today. And at the controls is our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
So, Jason, the Mariners manager, Eric Wedge, is blaming Dustin Ackley's hitting woes on sabermetrics. What do you have to say to Eric Wedge's outrageous claims that sabermetrics are ruining Dustin Ackley's career?
I'm going to guess that Eric Wedge thinks Dustin Ackley is a grinder, and that in his eyes makes everything okay, because for all those years he was with the Indians, it's all we heard about how somebody was a grinder, and they grinded at bats out, and they were just a grinder. And it didn't seem to matter if he hit 212 or couldn't move a runner over or couldn't throw a ball in from the outfield, but if you were a grinder, you were all right in Eric Wedge's eyes.
Well, it's funny, too, because his direct quote, and this is coming from CBSSports.com, was, "It's the new generation. It's all this sabermetric stuff, for lack of a better term. You know what I mean? People who haven't played since they were 9 years old think they have it figured out. It gets in these kids' heads." Like getting on base is this new concept. That's what he's kind of acting like. Like, oh, my, can you believe they're expecting this kid to take a walk and actually think about taking a walk or an approach at the plate? Like, that's something new. I don't understand where he's coming from with what he's saying.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here. You might not realize this because your team has never been managed by Eric Wedge. I'm not convinced how well he understands baseball sometimes.
Maybe he last played when he was 9 years old.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I heard these stories about, you know, how far he made it, and I think he was a catcher, but I'm surprised there wasn't anything about grinding out at bats in that quote, because that is what I heard for a good, like, I can't even remember how long he was the manager. 5 years, it seems like. Maybe it was just 1 year, but it felt like forever. It felt like decades.
Oh, man. I don't even know. I don't even know how to respond to that. I feel bad for Seattle fans, because it seems unfair to them that that's the guy that's in charge.
Yeah. Well, all I'm going to say is I actually was shocked that with Eric Wedge as the manager, someone did get optioned out, because I had to put up with Chris Jimenez as catcher / first base / corner outfielder for like 2 seasons, and I don't think he ever hit above 230.
But he was a grinder.
He was a grinder, so he was one of Eric Wedge's boys.
Grinding out those at-bats. Well, enough reminiscing on the past. Let's move on to what we have going on in the present right now. So on today's show, we're running just the two of us today.
Skeleton crew.
Yeah, the old skeleton crew today. Just like that Will Smith song, just the two of us. That's a Will Smith reference. We're gonna start off with the Cleveland Indians with Jason. I'll be talking about the Pittsburgh Pirates myself and their affiliates. We'll give a quick shout out to the Erie Seawolves. And we will finish up with the tweet mails at the end. So let's kick it off with Jason and the Cleveland Indians. Jason, what's going on with the Tribe?
Well, it was a pretty rough week for the Tribe. The bullpen, which has been the strength of this team for the last probably 3 years, even when there were no other strengths, has kind of hit a rough patch here. All of a sudden, Vinny Pastano, he blew a hold against Boston on Saturday. Why he was throwing in the high 80s as opposed to the low 90s. So that's a little scary based on his DL trip earlier in the year and their insistence that it was just tendonitis and they could handle it. Kind of makes you worry if it's actually more tendonitis or something like Tommy John or...
Oh, yeah.
Something worse, especially since Pastano's already had Tommy John. And the Indians are calling it a mechanical problem. And Mickey Callaway says it's all straightened out now. That's kind of interesting because doing a little research, Vinny Pastano actually for a while was a sidearm pitcher because he felt that relieved the stress on his elbow. And then he went to this kind of three-quarters short-arm delivery that he has now.
Yeah.
And that's when he suddenly boosted his velocity and became a dominant bullpen option. So it's kind of curious, like, is Pastano trying a different arm slot because that three-quarters arm slot now is hurting his elbow. So that'll be something to watch, and unfortunately we're going to have to watch it in the ninth inning because Chris Perez blew the save on Sunday against the Red Sox, and if you watched it, it was just disaster, right? I mean, it was just from the beginning. I literally walked away, and I came back, and he had given up two runs already, and there were two guys on base.
Oh, geez.
And then he walked Johnny Gomes and proceeded to go 2-1 on Jacoby Ellsbury with the bases loaded, two outs, and up by one run. And for those last, I'm going to say all three pitches to Jacoby Ellsbury, Perez was wincing. And on the last pitch, he ended up on his knees, faced kind of the wrong way towards first base. And Santana came out and Reynolds came out and they called Tito out. He tried to talk Tito into leaving him in the game. I mean, if you watch this, it was comical. Just absolutely comical.
That kind of sounds like something you would expect from Chris Perez, though. And Chris Perez coming into his bullpen sessions just going 100% from day one.
And I mean, like, if you listen to this podcast, you know that I put up with Chris Perez. Like, I don't think very highly of him. I don't think how he operates is the best way to operate. And this game was just like, it crystallized everything I feel about him. Because he's out there wincing in pain and not giving in.
Let me ask you this. Is this something that you think he would be alerting people of? Or is this something that he would keep to himself until he got out there and then realized, oh, man, my elbow's hurting too much for me to continue on?
I mean,
was there any mention of this anywhere else prior to that?
There's been no mention of any elbow or arm problems since, I think it was like May 15th. He missed a save opportunity because they said he was tight. You know, he's feeling a little pain. Then we hadn't heard anything since then. And now let me take the story a little farther because you haven't heard all of it. So Tito comes out and he's trying to tell Tito, I'm fine. Tito says, well, throw me a pitch. And Santana jogs back behind the plate. He misses Santana 5 feet to the left. And Francona's just like, oh, okay, no, that's enough. Like, I've seen enough.
Yeah.
So to me, that tells me Chris Perez is the kind of guy that would not tell anyone. Because here he is. He can't find the strike zone. He's all over the place. He's wincing and doubled over in pain. His manager's there, and he's still saying, no, I'm fine. Throws the pitch and misses Santana by, I mean, he probably almost hit Ellsbury, who was probably in the on-deck circle again. So now they're saying that he has shoulder tendonitis. And they actually put him on the DL, which shockingly is the first time in his career he's been on the DL. Because he's had injury problems, but I guess he's never actually gone on the disabled list before.
He didn't have a DL stint last season? For some reason, I thought he did.
See, I thought he did too. Now, at the beginning of last season, he missed all spring training and then pitched that first day and blew the save.
Yeah. So
exactly parallel to what happened this year, except he did convert the save. So I guess that's right. I mean, that's what's been widely reported. I haven't gone back and tracked it because everyone's saying it, but it seemed wrong to me, but I guess I think he just spends a lot of time sitting out, you know?
Yeah.
He's never actually been on the DL. So now the problem is you're going to put Pesano in the ninth inning, who's having some arm problems. Nick Hagedone came up to replace Chris Perez, and he's been pitching poorly lately, and he gave up a two-run home run to Joey Votto in the eighth inning yesterday. Rich Hill has not really been finding it. Let me see. Albers and Barnes have been doing okay, but now, you know, all of a sudden it's like, okay, we need some meaningful outings from you. You're not going to pitch like in garbage time here.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Cody Allen and Brian Shaw and Joe Smith, it's like, boys, you need to step up because it's getting down to the bottom of the bullpen here. You know, and poor Joe Smith, he had to come into that game against the Red Sox 2-1 to Ellsbury, the bases loaded, the stadium going insane. And first pitch, Ellsbury hit it off the wall and they lost the game. And it's kind of one of those things like you're saying, if you're hurting in the bullpen, please tell someone, because I have 100% confidence that if Joe Smith came in that inning from the beginning, it was a save.
Yeah.
I mean, I have 100% confidence in Joe Smith, but you put him out there in that situation, anybody, I mean, short of Mariano Rivera, is going to be teetering on the edge of giving it up, you know?
Right.
So it's kind of iffy, and if you want to talk about who else, because there's supposed to be a lot of bullpen arms in the minor leagues, Danny Salazar, who had right shoulder inflammation and is a starting pitcher, but a lot of people talk about him possibly as a converting to a reliever at least this year. He actually pitched well over the weekend. I think it was like he only went 4 or 5 innings, didn't allow any runs. He was actually pulled because of a pitch count. A lot of people were kind of concerned. Was he hurt again? But that was just because of a pitch count. Preston Gilmet is actually the AAA closer. And he's converted 14 saves, pitched 26 innings with 29 strikeouts and 7 walks. So he's pitching well. CC Lee, who's another arm going into the year people were hopeful of, he just was activated off his Tommy John surgery to Lake County. But hopefully he'll soon be in Columbus. Brett Myers, everyone's favorite Indian.
An all-around good guy.
An all-around good guy. Good family man.
Yeah, if you couldn't tell, there was a little... You'll have to Google Brett Myers. There's a tinge of sarcasm in there.
If you don't know what we're talking about, Google Brett Myers. I wish Dr. Garrett was here today with Perez and Pestano and Myers, but Brett Myers shut down because of elbow inflammation. So that return to the major leagues just got a little bit longer and a little bit more tenuous. Bryce Stoll is a... He's the closer now in Akron. He just struck out the side the other night to get his third save in Erie. He's got more appearances than that, 24 innings with 30 strikeouts and 13 walks. And Trey Haley actually has returned from being injured, but he's not pitching very well. And Tyler Sturdivant is still injured. So those were two arms that people were pretty hopeful for what they could turn into that either are hurt or haven't done much this year so far.
Well, let me ask you this. I want to know, do you think is there anyone on the Cleveland Indians that kind of can keep this slide from turning ugly? Because right now you guys are about two and a half games back of Detroit right now. I mean, do you think that this is something that you guys can hold over? Are there enough people to plug all the holes with everything that you need?
Well, you know, I think this is the great difference between this team, the way I see it right now. If you want to look at the pitching, I think there's the bullpen arms are there that can get it done as long as the starters can perform. You know, if you guys got Kazmir going 4 innings, you're going to have a hard time getting 5 shutout innings from this bullpen when all of a sudden Allen and Shaw are pitching in the 7th and 8th inning instead of the 5th and the 6th. But Masterson and McAllister have shown that they can go the distance in games and help the bullpen out. And I think the difference of this team is you got a guy like Swisher, you got guys like Giambi, Bourne, the veterans. They're going to hopefully step in and stop this thing from turning ugly, you know? I mean, we saw it yesterday. They go in after a pretty heartbreaking couple of games against the Red Sox. They put up a really good fight against a very good Reds team. But unfortunately, Hagedone gave up the go-ahead home run in the 8th. But again, they're in the game. You know, they're not going out and getting blown out after kind of a heartbreaking weekend. But tonight, we've got McAllister versus Latos. So, you know, it's like the Reds are no pushover, as we know. So they're going to be a team that's tough to tough to fight back against. But I think the team has that potential as long as the pitchers do their part, the starters, and don't overwork this bullpen. You know, if they can go six innings, that's going to be a big boost to having to use guys like Allen and Shaw in those innings than opposed to like in the fifth or earlier.
Right. Yeah, you always want to try and shorten those games the best that you can. And when you're missing key guys like Chris Perez and like Vinny Pastano, and I guess really quick, a quick aside on Vinny Pastano. When I see someone whose velocity starts dropping and they're talking about mechanical changes and things like that, to me, that seems like it's going to add up to an injury really, really quickly.
Oh, I mean, definitely. You know, and it's kind of one of those things like if you're doing it because you're hiding an injury, well, then already you're injured. If you're doing it to compensate for some soreness or tightness, you're going to get injured really quick, more seriously.
Yeah, you're gonna cause an injury somewhere else is what you'll do. But when you're missing guys like that, what happens is it tends to stretch out the games. So instead of counting, like you said, on your starters to go five innings and then 6, 7, 8, 9, the bullpen, now all of a sudden you need Ubaldo Jimenez to go another inning. And that's another round where people are starting to get to see his pitches and, you know, get adjusted to his arm slot and his delivery and his timing and everything like that. And that's just another inning that Ubaldo Jimenez can go out and get shellacked. Right. Whereas when you're cutting it down to guys like, you know, all of a sudden Cody Allen's coming in and he can throw an inning effectively. And then, you know, you just keep bridging that all the way to your closer. You know, it really shortens those games.
And that's going to be the interesting thing because, you know, we talked so much at the beginning of the year about the Indians pitching staff. And except for a rough stretch right in the beginning of the year, they actually have been pretty good. But I think a lot of it is because they've only been asking them to go five innings, you know.
Right.
And if you can just get us through the fifth, you know, we can pitch Cody Allen and Shaw and Smith and then still have Pastano and Perez and not even touch guys like Albers or Hill or Hagedone. And that was what was so great about having a deep bullpen. But now, like we're saying, you need that extra inning because you're losing one big arm. And I would not be surprised if before the week's over, Vinny Pastano's on the disabled list as well. So it's going to get interesting. I mean, it's like I said, I would rather Joe Smith get a chance to close these games out clean because I have no doubts that he can do it than to watch and find out in the ninth inning how Vinny Pastano's feeling.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see. I don't like those players with the mentality, especially pitchers, where they feel like they need to tough it out and try and pitch through it. Just take the time off that you need. Get right. yourself back to as close to 100% as you can be during a, you know, baseball season. And from there, pitch as healthy as you can.
Right. It's like somebody made a joke on one of the comment threads. I think it might have been on the Plain Dealer website saying, you know, they better have a radar gun in the Indians bullpen. And if Vinny Pastano is not throwing at least 90 miles an hour, don't even send him out there. Just put somebody else in.
Just yank him. We'll pull the old Bo Porter. We won't even make him face a batter. Just get him out of there.
Exactly.
So anything else going on in Tribe Town that we need to hit on?
Well, I think we want to make mention of one positive thing. this has been pretty negative. And that is the season Michael Brantley's having right now. He's hitting .304 with a .356 on base. He's only got two home runs, but 24 RBIs, a triple, and eight doubles. And, you know, this is a guy that kind of gets shortchanged a little bit because he's not your prototypical corner outfielder. But when you think of how different having a guy in the outfield or in left field hitting .304 is from Shelley Duncan and Aaron Cunningham and Johnny Damon and whoever else, you know. And then you look, and if you look at the guys leading the Indians in average, Michael Boren's right behind him at .303. All of a sudden, you know, you got a legitimate, at least for average, hitting outfield. And you can see how much of a difference it's making in this lineup, especially like when Swisher is back, and he was on paternity leave earlier, and Bourne is back, you know, and all these guys. When you've got Michael Brantley hitting like seventh in the lineup, a guy hitting 304 there instead of Jack Hanahan or something. And even though Brantley's not really your prototypical corner outfielder, he's going to hit a lot of home runs. The fact that he's driven in 24 runs so far this year shows you that he has the kind of doubles power, gap power to produce, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he's always been one of my favorite players to watch. He's got a beautiful swing. He doesn't strike out very much. And he's one of those ones that if I had a young kid learning how to play baseball, I would be like, watch Michael Brantley when he's at the plate. He doesn't try to do too much. He takes what they give him. He doesn't get fooled too much on breaking stuff or off-speed stuff. And at least they got something for CC Sabathia, because Matt Laporta, man, whew. he hasn't done anything.
Still still a little bitter over that, holding on to the Matt Laporta, huh?
Well, I threw that in for Bob, because he every time I talk to Bob anymore, he likes to talk about how Matt Laporta's raking in AAA, which he is.
AAA All-Star Matt Laporta, that's what you refer to him as.
Right, but it's just those numbers don't really mean anything anymore. It's just like, what do you don't even know what to make of them. It's like, so what? He could be hitting like 400, and I don't know if they'd call him up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And Michael Brantley's one of those guys. He's not a sexy player. He's not one of those guys that puts up those gaudy numbers that you want to look at. He doesn't steal a lot of bases or hit a lot of home runs or, you know, and he's not really a vocal player like a Nick Swisher or Chris Perez, but he does, like you said, very aptly, he's putting together quietly a very good season for Cleveland.
Right. That's all out of Cleveland, I think.
All right. Well, good. And I'm glad you gave you gave Michael Brantley a little bit of press. He probably needed that for his ego.
You know, his father, Mickey Brantley, was a major league player.
He's one of those baseball bloodlines.
Yep. Yep. Baseball in the blood.
Always interesting to hear. Well, let's move on to Pittsburgh and what's happening with the Pirates. The Pirates have been making a lot of moves lately with as far as their roster construction. Jared Hughes the other day was optioned back to AAA Indianapolis after Jose Contreras was activated from the bereavement list. Hurdle said that Hughes is in a better place than he was, but he still has some things to work on. I'm assuming that is in reference to his sinker. But one thing with the Pirates, and this kind of goes along with some of the Indian strengths, is in an exceptional bullpen like Pittsburgh's, it's nice to have the flexibility to be able to work with a player like Jared Hughes, where you can option him down to Indianapolis, give him some things to work on specifically, give him some goals and say, hey, listen, kid, you know, we like you. We like what you did for us last year, but this is what we need you to work on this year in order to work your way back up to the big team. So they kind of send him down to Indianapolis to work on, you know, whatever it is that they want him to work on, and hopefully it kind of gives him some time to figure out what he needs to do in order to work his way back into the bullpen, because he was a very good relief pitcher last year and a very important cog in the Pittsburgh Pirates bullpen. Travis Snyder has been hitting very well lately for the Pirates. The other day he hit a pinch hit two-out grand slam to help the Pirates to victory over the Cubs. I believe that was on May 21st. That was a week ago today.
Red-faced
Travis Snyder, yeah. I'm sure his face was extra red after smashing that grand slam.
Yeah.
The at-bat from Snyder was a good at-bat, which you like to see. A lot of times you hear guys talk about when they pinch hit, they just want to go up there and swing at the first pitch that they get that's a good pitch. And they say that pinch hitters say traditionally they like to do that because you don't know what you're going to get throughout the rest of the at-bat. So, you know, and this is your one chance in the game to get a hit. You get that first pitch fastball, jump on it. But Snyder worked the count to 2-1 before he just crushed a changeup that Sean Kemp left over the plate. And Hurdle said after the game, more often than not, home runs are thrown, not hit. And I thought that was kind of a neat quote to hear, because if you think about it, if you have that same approach at the plate every time, where every time it's, you know, I'm not going up there to hit a home run, I'm just going up there to hit the ball where it's thrown to me, or, you know, maybe I need to move the runner over a base or whatever it is. But if you go up there with that approach, then when they make those mistakes, those are the balls that are going to leave the yard.
Yeah, that's a good line, I think. I think it's interesting, though. Maybe that's what separates those guys that have the prodigious power from those that don't, you know. A guy like Miguel Cabrera, he can actually go up and hit a home run, where the other guys maybe more the home run is thrown, not hit.
Exactly. Well, think about Cleveland Indians first baseman, third baseman, DH, Mark Reynolds. You know, prior to and Reynolds is having a phenomenal year this year, but his years in Arizona and Baltimore, especially in Baltimore, his approach was just swing as hard as I can and that hopefully I hit something. You know, like he wasn't really a hitter. He was just a home run hitter. That was what he was. And it seems like you watch Mark Reynolds this year and he does seem like a different player. I've seen him take a couple balls going the other way and you know, you kind of see him evolve.
You never saw him go the other way before.
Exactly. You know, it was just, I'm going up there to mule hack and hopefully someone leaves something in the path of my bat.
That's like the announcers always say, you know, he just ran into one.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's good to have, and I agree wholeheartedly with Clint Hurdle on that. You know, when someone makes a mistake, if you have that good approach, more often than not, you're going to hit a mistake.
Right. So,
instead of just going up there and swinging as hard as you can and hopefully hoping that your bat hits something. Another interesting point from the Cubs series that I noticed as I was watching was Starlin Castro's play. And Starlin Castro infamously, I think it was last year, maybe even 2 years ago, was caught playing in the dirt when his pitcher was throwing the ball home. And, you know, managers talk about that all the time. You've heard, you know, his own manager and other managers around the league say, this kid's got all the talent in the world, but you're in a Major League Baseball game. You can't be turning your back to home plate playing with the flowers in the outfield while your pitcher's throwing the ball. And during that Cubs series, Starlin Castro made what I will give air quotes. You can't see me because this is radio, but I will give air quotes to an error on a ball that was hit up the middle. You know, he booted it. I don't know whether it's an easy play, but it's a play that you would expect an all-star shortstop to make. And then, you know, after that, he booted a real easy ground ball by Jordy Mercer in the fifth inning, just, you know, right to him, just completely misplayed it. It was interesting as a Pirates fan to watch this kid who has all this talent that you keep hearing all these great things about. That was two plays in the same game where he had those mental lapses. So it kind of makes me wonder how often he makes these mistakes when I'm not watching.
Right.
Just kind of something to think about, I guess, you know, from the other side of the diamond, I guess.
Well, I mean, like you said, it's no secret that he's been at least accused of having a lack of focus, you know?
Right.
And you know, if you watch Starlin Castro, it's not a lack of athleticism or ability.
No, that is not the problem.
So, when you get caught playing in the dirt, that makes it pretty clear it's just a lack of focus.
Exactly. It kind of reminded me when they were talking about him with that play where he had his back just completely turned to the pitcher. It reminded me of Butters on South Park when they had that Little League season that went all summer long, and you know, Butters is just Lou in the outfield just singing to himself, doesn't care. Starlin Castro is my Butters now.
Starlin Butters Castro.
Starlin Butters Castro. Continuing on, the bullpen in Pittsburgh has been phenomenal, and we touched on it a little bit with Jared Hughes' options, but they've affectionately come to be known as the Shark Tank, because I guess you're in deep water when they come into the game. I don't know if that's why, but if it's not why, I'd like for them to coin that and just
tag it on. I was wondering why, because I only see the Pirates games on occasion. So when I saw this on your talking points, I'm like, the Shark Tank. Okay, I wonder what the
Shark Tank. It's dangerous.
What the explanation is, but okay.
They mentioned it on Root Sports the other day, but I was kind of reading over some other things while they were talking about it. And he did specifically say why, and I can't remember how they actually coined the phrase the Shark Tank. But I did see Jason Greeley on Twitter, and he's been talking with the other players about buying an actual, very literal Shark Tank to put in the clubhouse. Oh, so okay. It's not going to be long before you see someone going on the DL because they were trying to play with a shark in the Shark Tank, I think. So we're on the cusp of our first shark-related injury in a major league clubhouse.
Who was that kicker in the NFL? He was a kicker for the Jaguars who went on the DL because he chopped his knee with axe.
Yeah, when he was cutting wood. I do remember that. Yeah, I'm not sure who that was.
But that was like a Jack Del Rio thing, their coach. He was like, we're going to be like, we're just going to like chop the log or something. Like, he was like some like motivational thing he had. And he had like a block of wood and an axe in the locker room. And wow, what was that guy's name? And he just stepped up and whack right in the knee.
I know. I'll tell you what, it's not as bad as the Gramatica's knee injuries. Those are the most amusing sports injuries around.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
There's celebrations and injuries at the same time. Continuing on with the Pirates' great pitching, they have 7 shutouts on the year already, and I'm pretty sure that number hasn't increased since I wrote up these points. But I'll go double check it. But they have 7 shutouts on the year already. Pitching's been phenomenal, starting pitching and bullpen. That's definitely been one of the biggest differences between last year's club and this year's club has been the consistent pitching. I mean, it's there night in and night out. You know, we lose a guy like James McDonald, and Genmar Gomez has stepped in, and he's pitched phenomenally well for the Pirates. I know that kind of hits close to home. Every time I mention Genmar Gomez, you cringe a little bit, but yeah. You know, he's been great for Pittsburgh so far. Jeff Karstens, he has some pain. He had some pain in his right shoulder. They shut him down indefinitely after he talked about the pain, and he was actually just placed on the 60-day DL.
Oh man, we talked about him last week.
Yeah, so that, it kind of looks like a little bit of the relief we were expecting to kind of step in and take over for some of these maybe more short-term guys like Genmar Gomez. Looks like some of that might not be there.
You one know, guy down.
Yeah, one down already. So there, you know, Charlie Morton just threw yesterday for Indianapolis, and he didn't have a great start. You know, hopefully his rehab is staying on track, and he'll be back to kind of provide some relief to that starting rotation if they need it. But I guess the biggest difference between the Pirates this year and the Pirates in years previous, at least from my perspective as a fan, has got to be that they're winning close games. You know, this year they you know, like a series against the Astros where we were confident that we were going to go in and win the series. The Astros actually played us well. And you know, on I think it was the 19th of this month, they beat the Astros 1-0. You know, in that Chicago series, they beat the Cubs 5-4, 1-0, 4-2. You know, these are games traditionally as a Pirates fan, I'm used to watching the Pirates lose. I'm used to just watching, you know, we'll have a lead maybe the whole game and then get to the eighth or ninth inning. And, you know, maybe Evan Meek comes in and just gives up a 5-run inning or, you know, something along those lines. And this year it's, you get to Mark Melancon and this game's automatic. I mean, Melancon's been phenomenal. You get to Greeley. Obviously Greeley's been one of the best relief pitchers in all of baseball this season. And it's kind of refreshing to see. I'm not closing my eyes at the end of these games wondering like, oh, what's going to happen? Oh,
I'll tell you what, man, it'll spoil you though. They hurt even worse when you're used to winning.
Yeah. Well, fortunately I've got 20 years of losing. so I think that'll kind of balance out the half or the quarter of a season of winning so far.
I mean, though, once you get accustomed to having a good bullpen, because like I said, the Indians have had a good bullpen for like maybe 3 years now. When they blow one, man, it's just like it burns.
It hurts a little extra.
Yeah, it's like, no, that wasn't supposed to happen. What just happened? You like you forget how to lose a game towards the end. And then they always quote those stats, you know, they're like, haven't lost a game after leading after the eighth inning in the last 28 games, and you're like, oh, no.
And then that just makes it hurt even worse.
Yeah.
Well, with the Pirates farm system, just a couple things to hit on. We've actually had Jordan Schusterman, one of our fans on Facebook, asked us if we could talk a little bit about Stetson Alley. So this one's going out to you, Jordan.
I don't know about Jordan anymore.
He might be of questionable moral character asking about such a character as Stetson Alley.
Yeah.
But listen, let me tell you this. All Stetson Alley has done since this season has started is hit. That's all he's done, and he's hit well. He's maybe striking out more than you would like to see, but from everything that I'm reading and collecting about it, he seems to be making adjustments. You know, I've watched, and we don't have access to minor league games below a lot of minor league games below AA on MILB TV, but I've been able to catch kind of snippets of his swings, you know, from various media outlets and things like that. And watching Stetson Alley swing, I mean, he has a prototypical power swing. Like, you would look at him and I bet if you put his swing and Mark Reynolds' swing next to one another, they would probably look very, very similar. He has that long power swing. You can see maybe where, like, you would think that soft spinning pitches are going to cause him a trouble. You know, he starts with his hands a little bit higher up by his head, and then he kind of drops them when he loads his swing. You know, one thing I like that he really seems to have is a short stride. You know, he has a wide base, a short stride. There's not a lot going on with his lower half. The upper half of his swing maybe has a little bit more going on, and I think that'll be one of the things to see. You know, when he starts struggling, when these guys start to figure out how to get him out with the soft spinning pitches, is he going to maybe quiet down his load a little bit more, maybe, you know, lower his hands a little bit so he doesn't have those moving around quite as much? I think it'll be interesting to see whether he's making these adjustments because, you know, there was an article on FanGraphs the other day written by Mike Newman, who went to talk to the Pirates assistant general manager. And he said that they're pleased with the adjustments that he's making. You know, once guys started to figure out they couldn't get him out with the fastballs, they started throwing him the breaking balls. And, you know, he's making adjustments at West Virginia. So you're kind of hoping, if he's doing that in West Virginia, that's something that he's going to do when he gets bumped up to Bradenton, or, you know, when he gets bumped up to Altoona, or, you know, wherever they decide they're going to move him. So I guess as a fan who watches that aspect of the farm system, it's good to hear that Stetson Alley's making adjustments already, because if you knew anything about him as a pitcher, Stetson Alley did not make a lot of adjustments as a pitcher in his couple years in the system. It was more like caveman. He throw ball hard and get outs, and he had no control. By the end of his career as a pitcher, he literally just was completely lost as a baseball player. So maybe that lends some perspective to a teenage kid who, you know, earned a $2.25 million signing bonus. Maybe all of a sudden he realized just how quickly baseball could be taken away, and maybe that's lent some perspective on his hitting. Who knows? But for whatever reason, Kyle Stark, the Pirates assistant general manager, is convinced that he's making these adjustments. So, you know, for the most part, unless you're down in West Virginia, you're going to have to take his word that that's what's happening.
So how long do you think he'll play the whole season in West Virginia? Do you think he'll move up after the All-Star break?
I hope it's one of those situations where they keep him in West Virginia for the whole season. I mean, you think about it, basically, with everything that they're doing with him, you think about his age, and he's where you'd expect a sophomore in college to be, you know, a draft-eligible sophomore. And I think, you know, with that little fraction of the season that he had last year coupled with this season, I would hope, and Pittsburgh seems to maintain this philosophy within their organization at this point, I would hope that they're going to keep him down there, give him time to develop, let him just completely master that level, and then next season, you know, let's start out at, you know, maybe Bradenton, and then look at Altoona. It's hard to say. You never know without being in the inner workings of what they think is best for the player. But, you know, they do seem to philosophically, like I said, Pittsburgh seems to take a very slow approach with their players now. So I'm kind of hoping that's what they do with Stetson Alley, because, you know, you pay a guy $2.25 million. He's got a ton of talent. It would be a shame to let it go to waste. So, and, you know, there's still a ton of baseball in his career. Just because, you know, he washed out as a pitcher and you know, he's trying to make his way back as a hitter, it doesn't mean that he doesn't have talent or that he's behind where he should be. you know, like I said, he would be where most sophomores in college are at right now. So I think just kind of give him time, let him develop and see where he can go. Just a couple notes on injuries before we move on to the Seawolves. Josh Harrison was recalled because Jose Tabata was placed on the 15-day DL. Tabata had a left oblique strain. Brian Morris was optioned back to Indianapolis. They seem to really be getting their money's worth out of this fourth option that they got from Brian Morris. Mike Zagurski was selected from Indianapolis. I thought it was funny the other day when Zagurski came on for his first appearance of the year. Greg Brown described him as portly. I thought that was just. I hope his parents were at the game and not at home watching it on TV to hear that, because that's not what you want to hear when your son's making his first appearance of the season. But Hurdle said that they brought Zagurski up because they wanted more left-handed pitchers against this Detroit lineup, which it makes sense. So I wouldn't be shocked if Morris is called back up and Zagurski sent down after this series. And then the last note, Starling Marte was scratched on Memorial Day with migraines, but he's supposedly going to be back in the lineup tonight. So we're recording this at 6:30, so we'll have to see whether he actually makes a start. So that's it with the Pirates. So real quick, we just want to touch on the Erie Seawolves. I think we failed to mention this. I don't know how, but I was going back and listening to some of the other podcasts to make sure. But I don't think I mentioned that Ramon Cabrera, one of my favorite catchers for the Seawolves, has been promoted to Toledo. So he's up in Toledo now. So you cannot go to the UT to see him any longer. And he's off to a little bit slower start in Toledo, but you know, you would kind of expect that with players when they're making that jump for the first time. I also had the pleasure of attending a Seawolves Senators, the first game of the series on May 20th. The Seawolves dropped the game 10-7 to Harrisburg, and Warwick Saupold, he started the game for the Seawolves. I now refer to him as the Wonder from Down Under, because we had the pleasure of interacting with some fans on Twitter who were trying to watch the game on minorleaguebaseball.com, and it turned out that Dan Vaughn, who was watching the game, is Australian himself, and was kind of taken in the game a little bit. And as he was taking in the game, he walked away from his TV for a second to watch. This was when all the tornadoes were ravaging our Midwest, and he went to go keep up with that and see what was happening. When he came back, he said the game wasn't on anymore. And so I tweeted out that day, hey, just so you guys know, the power's gone out in the stadium, because in the, I think it was the fourth or fifth inning, the power just clicked out in the middle of the game. So they had to wait for the lights to come back on and all that. So we were able to kind of communicate about that. But when Warwick Saupold came back, he was looking pretty sharp to start out the game. But when he came back, it was in the sixth inning when the power went out, I'm sorry. And the first pitch, the very first pitch after the delay, he just left it right across the middle. It was hit off the wall and then left. And then it was like just a couple pitches later, Ricky Haig for the Senators tied the game. He just crushed a ball off the light pole in left center. The stadium gun wasn't working, which it hasn't. It's been on and off this season with all the games that we've attended. But, I mean, just looking at Saupold, it kind of looked like he was throwing in the low 90s. He kept a lot of hitters off balance. So, you know, he had a great start. I think that delay probably had something to do with his not-so-great finish. But Wade Gaynor and James McCann both homered that game. That was kind of neat to see. And just a little neat point for baseball fans in general to keep an eye on. Anthony Rendon, who was back down with Harrisburg, started the game at second base. So I believe that was his third game that he started at second base. Our pal Mick Reinhart over at Mayflies and Big Flies had said that they're working him over there to kind of potentially figure out how to fit his at bat into the lineup. And then one last really kind of cool point. While I was at the game, I went down to talk to my brother, who was sitting right behind home plate with some of his friends. And I happened to look down. And when I looked down, I saw this guy walk by me that I, you know, it was one of those guys where you see him and you know him from somewhere, but it just didn't quite click yet. So this guy walks by me and I have that immediate sense of, I know this guy. And I actually said that to my brother. I said, I know that guy from somewhere. And so he walks by, I'm talking to my brother for a second, and he comes back. And he'd gotten some peanuts from the concession stand. And I'm just racking my brain. I'm like, who is this? And then all of a sudden it clicks with me. I looked at this man's beautiful salt and pepper colored hair and recognized it. Dave Dombrowski was sitting about two rows in front of my brother. I could literally shake the $100 bills out of his head if I wanted to reach out and touch him. So it was kind of neat to see Dave Dombrowski. I mean, he was there scribbling away, you know, taking notes on all kinds of things. So, Detroit Tigers fans, your general manager is hard at work. So rest assured, he's doing his best. Well, let's move on to the tweet mails for today.
Tweet mails.
And of course, this is our favorite section, our favorite segment of the show, because we get that awesome drop that comes before it as well. So this one's going to be going to the both of us, Jason, and I'll let you kind of tackle this one first. But Daniel Keller on Facebook, our good friend, follower, and listener, he wants to know which future call-up is more vital for their respective teams making the playoffs, Garrett Cole with the Pittsburgh Pirates or Trevor Bauer with the Cleveland Indians? Jason, I'll let you go ahead and field that one first.
Well, before I answer that, Chris Hansen of the Jacksonville Jaguars, that was the kicker who chopped his non-kicking foot, and the slogan was "Keep chopping wood." But anyways, I just had to put that in there.
The Axeman. All right.
Yeah, now, the Axeman. Okay. So, which pitcher is more? Which prospect is more important? Well, see.
Now this is talking about if they're going to make a playoff push.
Right. Obviously, we have to assume they're going to make the playoff push. I have to get out of my dark place I'm in right now, where all that matters is the bullpen in Cleveland, and think to the future. So, see, to me, I don't have doubts that Trevor Bauer can come up and be better than a Corey Kluber, or perhaps better than Ubaldo if Ubaldo reverts back to the old. You know, that's the only wild card with him. To me, I think the difference maker in the Indians rotation is actually Carlos Carrasco, because he is a more advanced pitcher and has dominated for periods of time. And I think he's the one that is really the wild card. Like, I don't have any doubt that Bauer can come up and perform better than, like I said, a Corey Kluber. I think the question for the Indians is whether Carlos Carrasco can come up, because that really would bolster the rotation. So I'm going to say, I don't know. I think it might be Garrett Cole.
I'm kind of surprised by that. Now, here's my response. And again, I kind of tried to take this question and think of it outside of my Pirates fandom context. And I'm going to say that I think Trevor Bauer is more important to the Cleveland Indians making that playoff push, because of the kind of those points that you touched on, the inconsistent starting pitching when you get past Justin Masterson and all of a sudden this revelation of Zach McAllister, who's been, you know, phenomenal for Cleveland right this season. Once you get past those two up at the top, I mean, I think there's really a lot of question marks. You know, Ubaldo's been pitching exceptionally well for what you've expected, or what you've become accustomed to, I guess, this season.
Right.
But, you know, you've seen over the last couple seasons that whatever he's doing can go away at the drop of a hat.
Right.
And I think especially now that we're kind of looking at this nicked up bullpen, you know, all of a sudden, what happens if something is serious with Chris Perez, or what happens if something is serious with Vinny Pastano, and what happens if all of a sudden you need these starting pitchers to start stretching out these games? I think Cleveland's going to need to rely on a guy like Trevor Bauer more than Pittsburgh's going to need to rely on a guy like Garrett Cole.
Okay, but see, I agree with you, or I disagree with you almost for the same reason. Because the Indians' rotation's so inconsistent, I don't think that they're one pitcher away. I think they're two pitchers away. And that's why I keep coming back to Carlos Carrasco, where I think it's possible that the Pirates' rotation could hold together enough that an addition like Gerrit Cole could be what sets them over the top, meaning to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Probably through a wild card. But that's kind of where I'm coming from.
That's an interesting point. So your basic thought is that because even if Trevor Bauer were to come up and pitch phenomenally, that you would still need another arm, and right. That other arm needs to be Carlos Carrasco, that a guy like Gerrit Cole is inherently more important because he's just that one piece that you could need to put you over the top to begin with. So your thought is Trevor Bauer's just might not be enough by himself.
Right. So
he needs some other things to click.
Scott Kazmir is not going to – I mean, he could pitch lights out for the next 3 months. He's going to be, I'm assuming, on an innings limit because the last time he pitched was for the Sugar Land Skeeters. So
the old Sugar Land Skeeters.
Right. So what I'm saying is you're going to need someone to replace Scott Kazmir. If you're going to make a playoff push, you're either going to need – someone to replace Corey Kluber or Ubaldo, I'm guessing. So you're going to need two pitchers.
That's interesting. So, Dan, I hope that addressed your question. I think we answered everything in the exact reverse that you would expect. Like, if you would have said, these guys are going to disagree on this point, they probably would have – everybody would have said, oh, yeah, that makes sense. If you would have said they would have disagreed on this point – about the opposite team's players, they would have been like, that makes no sense. So we're throwing you the old curveball. We're keeping you on your toes. A little off-speed stuff there for you.
There you go.
So before we wrap it up real quick, just want to mention that tomorrow I'll be attending the Pirates game. It's the first of two games at home against Detroit. So they played this weird – they started it this season, these four-game series where you play two games – on the road and then two games at home. So Pittsburgh's finishing up the second game on the road against Detroit tonight. And then they'll be coming home tomorrow to finish up two games against Detroit. It'll be AJ Burnett versus Anibal Sanchez, former Erie Seawolf Anibal Sanchez, correct? Didn't Sanchez pitch for the, he pitched for the Seawolves, I think, when they were a Marlins affiliate, didn't he?
I think that's correct.
Yeah, we'll double check that just to make sure. If we need to make a correction, we'll let you know. But yeah, so AJ Burnett, Anibal Sanchez will be squaring off tomorrow to the two of the hottest pitchers in their respective leagues right now. I'll be down in the down in the nice seats tomorrow, not up in the nosebleeds. We'll be down in the 20s sections. We got a deal on some good tickets tomorrow. So if you're there, I'll be tweeting from the game. So if you wanna come down and find us, we'll be down in that section tomorrow. So that's going to wrap it up for today. We'd like to again thank our listeners and ask if you're listening to us on iTunes that you give us a rate and review. Those reviews drive our popularity up. If you want to check us out on the internet, you can do so at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter @tristatebb. And you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you next week.